From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. And as we move on through the Lenten season, and a lot happening in our world, of course, and our bishops have issued a number of statements on things, including about the Dreamers, and we will talk with John Watkins, the head of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns, a little bit later in the program about a National Catholic Call-In Day to Congress for Dreamers, and John will be accompanied by a Dreamer, and we'll talk with them later, a little bit later in the program. Right now, I'm looking at a wonderful book, The Light Entrusted to You, Keeping the Flame of Faith Alive. Author is Dr. John Wood. He joins us now from the great city of Toledo, Ohio. Dr. Wood, welcome.
Thanks, Bob. Great to be on the show.
Good to have you. You're, of course, familiar with John Denver's Toledo, Ohio song?
I am not. No.
Oh, you're not? Oh, my goodness.
No.
You'll have to look it up. They talk about
it. It was a little before me, yeah. Yeah, I live in the Toledo Diocese, but I don't actually live in Toledo. But
okay.
Yeah.
I think he talks about the roll of the sidewalks up by 9 or something, which sounds like my hometown.
Yeah.
Indeed. Well, it's good to have you. A lot of my relatives were from Ohio, so it's somebody told me one day that every time they test market a product, you know, a new product, it's everything from laundry soap to bread to peanut butter, it's Akron. They go to Akron.
Yeah, Akron, Ohio. Yep.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm actually a mobile eye doctor. That's what my vocation is. I travel to nursing homes and do eye exams for a living. But probably 5 or 6 years ago, I wrote a book called Ordinary Lives, Extraordinary Mission that was published by Dynamic Catholic, Matthew Kelly's Dynamic Catholic Book Program. Mm-hmm. And that really opened up a lot of opportunities for me to travel across the country and share my faith. And I'm also a dad and 4 kids. My wife, Kristen, and I are raising 4 children, and so they're kind of the inspiration of this new book that I just released from Ignatius Press called The Light Entrusted to You.
Your children all have perfect eyesight?
Well, I don't know about perfect eyesight, but yeah, they see pretty well, yep.
Can you diagnose me over the phone? Because last night reading your book, I had a little trouble focusing.
Yeah, well, there's only so much I can do over the phone, but yeah.
If I find the older I get, the harder it is to read at night.
Yeah, that tends to happen. That focusing ability seems to decrease with age. So
yes,
a little
indeed.
Bit extra light and a little bit stronger reading glasses. Yeah, that's all I can recommend.
A lot of my wife's always saying, can you turn the light down a little bit? I said, no, I want to turn it up.
Yeah.
So the light entrusted to you, divided into 6 parts, all a part of an acronym from the saints. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I wanted to kind of create it, kind of set up like the catechism. The catechism has 4 pillars of the faith. This really is set up into 6 pillars of the faith, which makes the acronym of the word saints. You know, the goal and mission is to make saints, to go to heaven and become the saints God created us to be. So there's 6 chapters. First chapter, S, stands for saving grace. Everything begins and ends with God's grace, and we need to rely on that grace. The A is athletics. I use sports a lot to teach virtue, and in my own life, they've helped me, you know, learn my faith. I discovered the same thing it takes to make a champion is the same thing it takes to make a saint, so we can use that to pass on the faith. The I is instructor's manual. It's about the Bible, the greatest story ever told, and everything in our faith assumes we know that story, and we have to rediscover that story and pass it on. The N is need to know him. We need to, first and foremost, we need to build that relationship with God and give that relationship to our kids and grandkids. You know, that's the most important thing. Our religion is about relationship more than rules and regulations. And then the T is theology of the body. John Paul II's great teaching about who we are and why we're here and how we're made in God's image. And the final S is sacrifice and service, which is really about the spiritual and corporal works of mercy. It's about making people's day and being the hands and feet of Jesus Christ in the world. So everything in Catholicism kind of fits into one or more of those categories, and I just share all the resources that have helped me as an adult and resources that have helped me pass it on to teens and then resources that help me share it with my small children at home.
You know, I've been asked, along with Kevin Staskow, who runs a lot of our youth programs here from the diocese, to present a workshop on passing the faith off onto our children. And I'm like, oh, help me, help me. You know, it's difficult. It is. I have six kids, and it is a difficult challenge. And each child is a different challenge,
yeah,
in a different way. And wanting to pass the faith on to them, and not only is it the future of the church, it's their eternity, it's our eternity. And it is obviously a parent's greatest heartache to see a child fall away from the faith. And yet some of us feel almost clueless sometimes. You know, trying to find the magic words or the magic formula or what it is. I'm taking your book to this workshop.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a lot of people that have that sentiment, that frustration. And, you know, I remind people I'm an eye doctor. I don't have a theology degree, so I need resources to help me understand the faith in a way I can understand so that I can pass it on. And that's kind of what I wanted to give people, that we can use movies and sports and music and things people already know and love, and find ways, wherever you can find beauty and truth and goodness, you can find Catholicism and ways to share the faith. And I think the best way to learn it is to share it. And so I encourage parents, you don't have to know everything before you share anything. You go on that journey together with your children to learn and discover the faith, because it is, I think, the best gift we can give to the next generation. It makes them better at everything they do. It's relevant to everything in our life, and so we have to step it up a notch in doing that and passing it on and keeping that flame of faith alive.
You know, Doctor, that's one of the reasons I like this book so much, is because it is divided up into these six sections, and there's something for everyone. For me, it was athletics. I'm a recovering sports writer. I still think of myself as an athlete. I think, you know, I have to stay away from mirrors, but and athletics, we hear this a lot. Sometimes it's too much of a cliche about, you know, teamwork, and it teaches life lessons and all this stuff. Sometimes that's true, sometimes it's not. It can teach some bad life lessons too if we get away from the. But talk about athletics and how that works into this.
Yeah, so I like acronyms. They help me remember things, and so I divide that chapter into another acronym. And in my own life, I've discovered, you know, maybe I discovered my faith more in sports than anything else. And the acronym I use is SPORTS. You know, self-discipline, perseverance, obedience, teamwork, repetition. Repetition, teamwork, and sportsmanship, those are all virtues that make a champion, but they're also virtues that make a saint. And we have to learn to be obedient. We have to practice every day. We have to work together as a team. We have to have self-discipline. And in Lent, we know our church requires disciplines because she wants us to be champions, not just ordinary, nice people. She wants us to be saints. She's going to push us and challenge us like a great coach does. And so I think most kids will strive for a championship, and if they have that willingness and drive to do that, we can help them strive for something greater, a greater goal, which is sanctity. So from that battle cry of win, 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 I discovered the battle cry of sanctus, 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 and we can use that to our advantage to help kids in their journey and ourselves, too. I think a lot of people relate to sports like you and I do.
Yeah, the six things you list: self-discipline, perseverance and passion, obedience, repetition and recreation, teamwork, and sportsmanship. I can tell you, my dad, who he liked to watch games with me. He would attend everything I did, whether it was Little League to tennis matches to whatever it was. And but boy, the two things he insisted on from me before I went out to, you know, play with my friends or go to something a little more organized, the sporting activity was teamwork and sportsmanship and respect for your opponent, that your opponent cared about this like you did, you know, and to treat him fairly. Don't cheat, don't intimidate, don't do all these little subtle games that you might play with somebody. Treat him like you would want him to treat you. And boy, those things really stuck with me throughout my life.
Yeah, absolutely. absolutely. Those are great, great life lessons. And I discovered, I ran a lot, and I discovered that the purpose of running a race is not to beat everyone else to the finish line as much as it is to finish with nothing left to give. And
that's
so,
right.
So it's all about giving that best effort, trying your best, and letting God do the rest is what my mother always told me. And that, I think, perfectly sums up the genius of Catholicism in one sentence, to give your best effort, to lay it all out there. And your opponents, in many ways, are helping you by challenging you, helping you become, you know, the greatest athlete you can be. So, yeah, great life lessons there.
Well, you have some wonderful testimonials. People that are familiar to a lot of us. Curtis Martin, the founder of Focus. Jennifer Fulweiler, a friend of mine from Sirius Radio, and just a really, really great Catholic talk host. Reverend Daniel Thomas who was the Bishop of Toledo, and then yep. Mother Margaret Mary from the Children of Mary Sisters. All comes to us from Ignatius Press. You can get it at your favorite Catholic bookstore or by contacting Ignatius.com. The author is Dr. John R. Wood, The Light Entrusted to You, Keeping the Flame of Faith Alive. Thanks so much for joining us today, and thanks for this great volume. Like I say, I'm taking it to this workshop.
Thanks a lot, Bob. It was great being on the show. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks, John. Greatly appreciate it. God bless you, and God bless your work, and best of luck with the best of wishes with this book. We'll take a quick break here. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. You can drop by and shop at their thrift store, 2275 Watt Avenue. It's open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, furniture, appliances, clothing, books, and everyday household items. You can give them a call, 916-972-1212. We'd also like to thank the kind and dedicated folks at Associated Sound for all their help in keeping all our equipment running with their excellent sound assistant and technical expertise. When it comes to sound, Associated Sound is the only name you need to know. Give them a call. They're at 916-649-8040 or go online at associatedsound.com. Well, located in Citrus Heights, Christ the King has served Northern California in the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years. Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King as the jewel of the diocese, a wonderful retreat center. They have parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. You can give them a call, 916-725-4720. That's 916-725-4720. Or visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights.
This is Lincoln Snyder, Superintendent of Catholic Schools, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thanks, Lincoln, and thanks for all you do here for Catholic schools in the Diocese of Sacramento. Well, John Watkins, the Director of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns, joins us today.
Good morning, Bob.
John, you brought a wonderful guest with you, a college student.
Yes, Maria Jose. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. My name is Maria Jose Fernandez Flores. I am a current senior at William Jessup University.
Can you fit your whole name on a business card?
It's very tight.
Very tight, yeah. Good. John, today we're talking about the social concerns part of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns.
That's right. So the U.S. bishops have called for a special alert for Catholics across the country. This is a national Catholic call-in mm-hmm. to Congress for Dreamers.
On Monday.
This Monday, mm-hmm. the 26th, all day long. And the reason for that is because, unfortunately, as I'm sure most of your listeners are aware, Congress has been unable to do anything to act on the children, some called Dreamers or DACA deferred action right. for new arrivals. But for those children that had come over with their parents and have been living here their whole lives and have been going to school and maybe have served in the military or maybe going to college like Maria Jose and are contributing members of this society. And in September the current administration had ended a program that the Obama administration started, the deferred action.
By executive order, basically.
By executive order. That caused a crisis for about 1.8 million now young adults that now have their status in question. And that has an immediate impact right now. For many, because every day we have about 122 people lose their work permit status currently. So that's happening now. But then on March the 5th, the executive order takes effect. And at that point, we have a much more substantial impact to that 1.8 million young adults. And so what does that mean? That means for them, obviously, it is a possible danger for them, for their themselves to being deported. But more immediately, it impacts their ability to provide for themselves or their family. And so obviously, and I think this is on a bipartisan level, I think the Republicans in the House and Senate and Democrats have said anyway that they agree that we need to take care of these young people that have come over. But unfortunately, what has happened is that this issue has become a political football and nothing has been able to be dealt with this issue for now decades. So this is a problem now that is immediate, and the real concern that the bishops have right now is with the fact that the bipartisan bill that had failed last week to get through the Senate, there's a concern that the Congress is going to give up on this, and we just cannot give up on these young people. These are people that are, for all intents and purposes, have lived here their whole lives. They are productive members of this society, and we morally cannot turn our backs on them. And so the church is saying, no, get back to work, and we need to protect these people.
And in fact, two bills failed in the Senate last week.
That's right.
One overwhelmingly and one much closer. Didn't get to the 60 it needed. I think it got 54.
That's right.
And then the one that was backed by the president got, I think, only 39 votes.
39 votes, yeah.
And this is one most of us have gotten our hopes up a number of times on this because of the polling. And this is not about Barack Obama or Donald Trump or Republicans or Democrats or independents or whatever you are. This is a human rights issue, and it's something that whether it's Matthew 25 or any there's a million different places we can cite in Scripture, Leviticus, a lot of them, and I'm not a Scripture expert. People can tell you about a lot. Those are the two I remember, so I keep falling back on them, so I try to fool people. But those are really strong, and there's no minced words there, and. This one, if you see the polling, it's overwhelmingly in favor of coming up with a solution that will allow the Dreamers to stay.
That's right. And for the listeners who are probably, for those especially that are saying, now why are we talking about politics? This is politics. What does this have to do with faith? I think it's really, really, really important to stop and remember why the church does anything.
Right.
Why does the church have hospitals? Why does it have schools? Why does it have social service agencies? Because people matter, and the people suffering matters, and the church is called to care and love for people. And it is out of mercy and God's love that we do these things. In the same way, that is the reason why the church speaks up, because it impacts people. Because 1.8 million people in this country, once their status is taken away, will not be able to live the American dream. They will be in the shadows. People like Maria Jose, who have worked very hard and are now coming towards the end of her studies at William Jessup University, What then? What happens with all that time and investment? And that investment is not just for her. It is for us, the community. And so we're really turning our backs on ourselves. And of course, yes, the gospel calls us in a very particular way to welcome the stranger. Mm-hmm. And the gospel does that, and Jesus does that because he knows it's hard. Because he knows that as human beings, it's hard for us to welcome people that are different than us. Right. But we have to do it in order to live out our faith. That's what makes us Catholic. And so I understand for all of us that can be a challenge, but we need to challenge ourselves to live as a gospel, as disciples of Christ, not as the Democratic Party or the Republican Party would have us do, but as Jesus Christ would have us do.
Yeah, you know, people who say that, yeah, this is politics, there's hardly anything that isn't politics anymore, and the Catholic Church has never been afraid. We've taken positions on minimum wage. We've taken positions on certainly on abortion. Abortion is a huge political issue and has been for 45 years now. And the church is not afraid to take positions. In fact, it's one of the things that makes me proud to be Catholic, besides the fact that it's the church Jesus founded, is the fact that the church is not afraid to take sometimes unpopular positions because they are reflecting gospel values. There's hardly an endeavor of a human endeavor that the church does not have a position on. We're very bold about going into the marketplace, and many people will want us to just know four walls of the church. That's it. Whatever you do in there, that's fine. Keep the door closed and don't be too loud. But once you come out in the marketplace, be quiet. That's not our faith.
That's right. And I think the other question I often get is whether I'm speaking to someone on the left side of the spectrum or the right is, why does the church focus so much on abortion? Why does the church focus so much on immigration or immigrants? And the reason is fairly simple, and it started back in the Old Testament with the Anawim, the little ones that we in a special way in Catholic social teachings, we call it the option for the poor, right, that we have a special concern for those that can't take care of themselves. Right. And as immigrants, so obviously as an unborn child, you can't speak up for yourself. You can't take care of yourself. No one is going to protect you unless someone outside of yourself speaks. But in a similar way for immigrants, and that's not just in this country, but across the world, that this is usually a group of people they do not have the same rights.
Right.
They're not able to speak up for themselves. And so the church has historically been compelled to be the voice for the immigrant, to speak the truth about who the immigrant is. They are not illegal aliens. They are children of God, and they're made in the image and likeness of God, and they are our brothers and sisters. And we speak that truth. And then that truth should inform how we legislate. That should inform our laws. We don't sit, you know, the U.S. bishops don't sit and make laws, but we speak the truth to legislators, and hopefully that informs the laws. And when we say the church, we have to move beyond. We can't rely on our bishops or our priests. The church is the whole body of Christ, and that includes the lay people. In fact, the Catholic social teachings makes it very explicit that the primary responsibility in the temporal order, that means in the political world and in the actual world, is with the laity. That's us. Mm-hmm. And so this is an invitation to all of us during this Lent to live out our faith in a public way. And I would like to especially encourage folks to call Senator Harris, Kamala Harris, because mm-hmm. she did not vote to support right. this bipartisan bill. Right. And so we, you know, want to put a little pressure on her. Don't give up. We got to put something through, and we're going to work something to take care of these young people.
And, you know, every politician or elected official I've talked to, from city council people all the way up to senators, U.S. senators, say, we pay attention. We do. We get a lot of emails. We get a lot of phone calls. We count them. We pay attention, you know, and we listen to what people are saying. And you know, and people like you say, you know, it's not Republican or Democrat. And if people are worried about the church being political, you can't pigeonhole us. Our position on abortion would, according to the pundits, makes us conservatives somehow. Respect for life makes you a conservative. I'm not sure why that is. Our position against in favor of immigration supposedly makes us liberal. And I'm not sure why that does, because they all spring from the same thing. They all spring from the teachings of Jesus, from the laws of God, you know, from what he told us. And Jesus, the greatest commandment, love the Lord your God with your whole heart. And so, and what's number two? Love your neighbor as yourself, and everything else flows from that. So love your neighbor as yourself is pretty specific. Five words. Five words, and they're still relevant today. Maria, welcome.
Hi.
It's so good to see you.
Good to see you as well.
So what are you studying at William Jessup?
I'm studying business marketing.
Very good. How many more years do you have to go?
I am finishing up, so
really?
I will graduate in 2 months,
so
actually.
So you have a bachelor's degree in what? In
business administration, emphasis on marketing.
Wow, and what are you going to do?
Well, you know, that's really funny. Well, speaking in the sense that I can still continue my education and work, I'm thinking about going into public policy, actually. Mm-hmm. So a little bit different from marketing, but I'm currently working at the California Catholic Conference.
Oh, good.
And so I want to continue that realm of work. So I applied for a fellowship program with the Capitol so I can work as a legislative aide and work for an assembly member. And so if God willing, I get accepted and all that works out, I would be doing that. And then my goal with that is to be able to learn more about the legislative process, see how that works. And then that way I can come from the outside through a nonprofit organization or another local mm-hmm. organization to then do make changes in our government.
Very good.
Yeah.
So when I was 4 years old, my parents decided to move to Davis so Dad could go to college. He'd gone into World War II and hadn't finished college. And I was 4 years old. And they lived in Portland, and they brought me along. So I'm an illegal Californian. We crossed the border. We snuck across at night, you know, and I'm an illegal Californian. Tell us your story.
So I was born in Lima, Peru. So I...
Oh, you're a long ways away.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I actually have a different way of getting here. I didn't cross the border illegally. I did come with a tourist visa, mm-hmm. but I just overstayed it with my mom. My
okay.
mom brought me at the age of four.
Okay.
Yes.
And see, we have something in common.
Yeah, really. And what caused the difficulty was that we came right after 9/11. It was September 21st in 2001, and that made them suspicious of why we were coming, mm-hmm. Why did we want to be here, and my mom.
What was your mom's thinking when
to
you
bringing
came?
Me? Mm-hmm. My parents had gotten divorced, and she the tensions in my dad's family and in even my mom's family. It was really difficult for her to be raising me in the way that she wanted. Mm-hmm. She felt that I was very being badly influenced by my family members, mainly from my dad, and she wanted to be able to escape the bad. Issues in mm-hmm. our family. So it wasn't necessarily maybe like political issues. It was more family issues. And mm-hmm. she felt that leaving the country was the best bet. And in the United States is where they say there's a lot of opportunity. And so my mom had come to the United States several times as a tourist and got a little bit to see how it is. And she figured I can make life here. So she brought me along. Had to get permission from my dad, obviously. But I think by letting you know of this, you can see how the relationship was. My dad, in order to give my mom permission to take me, his deal was that I don't have to support her mm-hmm. at all, like in child support. And I was right. only 4 years old. So I think that gives you a little bit picture of how the family was.
So your mom's intent was to stay in the United States?
She did. She wanted to, well, she tells me that she wanted to work here she didn't plan to be here her whole life. She wanted to work and make enough money so that we can go back to Peru and then make a better life in like a faraway city from mm-hmm. my family. Mm-hmm. But then with the difficulties of being, you know, an overstaying visa, then she didn't have those opportunities to grow and be successful. And then we've just been stuck here because of the fear of we can't come back in if we do leave. So that's what made us stay here even longer.
So tell us about your journey. You got on an airplane, I presume?
Yes.
And you landed where, San Francisco? Or?
I think we landed in Houston. Mm-hmm. And then that's where we got stopped by immigration. And my mom tells me that it was really scary and that she asked me to pray. She's like, God listens to the little ones. Mm-hmm. Please pray that they let us in, just that they let us in. And my mom sometimes regrets saying that they just let us in. She's like, I should have prayed for, you know, some sort of legal status as well, because he definitely granted us to let us in. But, you know, then that just got a lot more difficult. She ended up remarrying here, but to another undocumented, so didn't help our status. And now...
How'd you end up in this area?
My uncle lived here, and so my mom moved here because my uncle gave us hospitality for the meantime. And then once my mom got remarried, then we moved out, and we've just stayed here because it's the place that we know.
So did you go to high school here?
Yes, I've been here since elementary school.
Oh, wow. Where'd you go to high school?
I went to two different ones. I went to Our Lady Guadalupe, mm-hmm. the charter school there, and then I transferred over to Center High School in Antelope. Okay.
Yeah. Both good schools.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you are one of those people. You're probably 21, something?
21, yes.
Yeah. So you're one of those people that they're talking about. And John, maybe you can answer this. For a long time, it was 800,000. We kept hearing 800,000. Now we're hearing 1.8 million. What are the two numbers?
Well, there's been 800,000 young people that have taken advantage of the deferred action for mm-hmm. childhood arrivals, which is not the entire amount of young people that would qualify mm-hmm. if you were to be able to qualify for. So really what we're what the church is calling for, and in fact the Trump administration and most of the bills that have been mm-hmm. proposed is talking about the 1.8 million, which is the actual number of young people that have that came over as children,
right.
as young children.
So what is, if the church could write the law, what would you're now the immigration czar.
Well, I want to be careful because we do not write legislation. Here's what I would say about that. We would have some broad principles here. Number one, we would recognize the young people and give them a path to citizenship, that they have been here and they have rights to this country, and we need to fully welcome them into this country at this point. We would recognize the fact that any country has the right to protect its borders. Sure. So, if there is good legislation, common sense legislation for that, we'd be fine as long as it is proportional, as long as it abides by our own values, sure. as sure. in terms of how we treat people. But number three, I think we would be very, very careful about this, what they call chain migration.
Right. Yeah, explain that.
Well, it's unfortunately a word that's used to sort of sound like a really terrible thing, but we're talking about a family-based mm-hmm. migration system, and that's been the system for many years. I mean, this is how all of us, if you will, have come over. Someone in our family has come over, and then whether it's before or after formalized immigration, but then we welcomed our family members in.
Sure.
And why is that a good thing? Is because our whole society is based on the fabric of family. And it strengthens our community. It strengthens individuals. It doesn't, it should never be seen as a weakness. It is always a strength.
Yeah, I mean, if you want these people to succeed, so much better if they've got family around them.
Right. And we want everyone to succeed. And when the church is opposed to any time that you're going to be using family as a bad word. It is just not right. No. It is wrong. It's bad policy to do that. And so we would definitely be opposed to, quote unquote, this cutting down of chain migration. We want to really have a system that is centered on family, that is Absolutely. Centered on the human person. That reflects our values. How that, you know, translates into legislations, we really do want to leave that to the policymakers. That is, you know, we don't want to get into the weeds with that. That is not our core business. Our core business is Jesus Christ and proclaiming the good news and keeping our legislators focused and their eye on the prize. The eye on the prize is these are your brothers and sisters. Right. Remember that. These are children of God. Do not treat them otherwise. That's how you're treating God. Don't do it. You know, and we're just making that clear. Make our laws reflect our values, and that's our job. And they got to do their job.
Maria, I know you've got a class in Western Civ to go to. Maybe you can do some research, but I did some research, and I discovered that the people on the Mayflower were undocumented. They did not have papers. So, and yet, if you're a descendant of the Mayflower, man, you've got all the rights and privileges of an American citizen. And talk about a path to citizenship. I've heard as many as 12 years, which sounds a bit onerous, but maybe it's not. And as I understand it, you would have all the rights and privileges of an American citizen, other than while you're going through the process, other than you couldn't vote and you couldn't serve on a jury. And both things are very important. But, you know, the 14th Amendment doesn't protect American citizens. It protects any person. And they chose those words specifically, that every person in a jurisdiction, whether it's Arizona or California or anywhere in the U.S. jurisdiction, Guam, has the same rights as any other American citizen in terms of all the constitutional rights, other than that you couldn't vote. Is citizenship itself the prize, or do you just want legal status? Not necessarily the prize, the goal.
Yeah. For me, personally, my goal, citizenship.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine myself not being a citizen here. This is where I grew up, and so if I were to just have legal status, I feel like that limits me. Mm-hmm. It would limit me from being able to, vote. Because if I'm going to be living here, I want to be able to have a say in the laws it's going to be.
But legal status with a path, and you're on the path, that would be acceptable. You don't want
if,
the path
if there's
to be
some
too
sort
long.
Of path. Yeah. I think that would be okay. I think what I wouldn't want to happen is them to just continue giving us temporary status where we have to continually have to be paying and renewing. One, it's a hassle. It costs a lot of money. And if we stay in that process, we're never going to be able to become as successful as we want. It's very annoying that even if you miss renewing by like a week, you'll lose your status for a week. And I did lose a job when I applied like a week or two later for my renewing of DACA. And so I had a job, and then I had to, they were like, well, I'm sorry, because it's not valid for this date. You can't work.
So have you been at William Jessup all 4 years?
Yes.
So when you applied to college, were there any questions about your status?
They asked about, like, if I'm able to work. Thankfully, when I went into college, the DREAM Act or the DACA had already happened, so then they allowed Cal Grant to happen. Mm-hmm.
So you could get a Cal Grant.
Yes. So that's the only type of government aid that I get. Everything else is just financial aid. So they didn't necessarily specify, like, are you a DACA recipient, but they said they do ask if you're like a U.S. citizen or if you're like a resident. And I always just say I'm a resident because I do live here. And it wasn't until the that DACA got terminated that I realized they knew I was specifically a DACA student, because then they called me and they're like, we know about your status. And so honestly, since that was 4 years ago, I'm not exactly sure how they ended up finding out. Maybe it could have been through my financial aid, because I do remember asking, like, and they're telling me, oh, you can't get loans because you're not a citizen and stuff. So that must have been how they figured it out. But there isn't a question that necessarily says, are you?
What about with employment? Have you had part-time jobs?
Yes, yeah.
And were there any, you got Social Security tax, you got income tax, all those forms. Was there any questions about your status or any roadblocks for you?
Yeah, there was it asks you if you are a citizen or if you're a work authorized alien. And so I would have to click that, and then I would have to add my USCCB, or not USCCB, sorry, that's the Catholic, the USCIS, I think it is. So it's our work employment card. We have to add that number. And so we're like lawful aliens, that's what they refer to us as, that are able to work. And so on my social it says DHS authorized work only. So definitely people can tell when they see my documents, and I have had employers not know what that even was. I was like, oh, what is this? And it took them a few days to talk to their supervisor and figure out if that was valid for me to work. So I have had some roadblocks because of
that. I know you have to get to class. You only got a couple of minutes. But and John, hopefully you can stick around and we'll talk a little bit more of the specifics about Monday and how the talking points for Monday when you call your congressman or senator. What's your day-to-day like in terms of having this cloud
with this idea of what's going to happen with DACA? Well, I don't know how far advance I can plan things. I have to constantly be asking people, well, is this going to be allowed? Do you think I should go for this? Is this okay? Like, even for applying for the Capitol Fellows, I had to ask somebody there, will they accept me if I'm a DACA recipient? Will this be okay if nothing happens, you know, with us? And the thought that's come to my head is my diploma gonna count? So am I just wasting my money? And my university said that it shouldn't matter. So hopefully with that mindset, I'm thinking that it's going to be okay. I think I'm one of the few DACA recipients that stays very hopeful, because I know many of us have a much difficult time, but I think it's my faith in God that really holds me up and doesn't tear me down and doesn't let me get negative. I try to be positive because I know God isn't going to abandon me. I know that He's always there, even if it's something difficult. You know, He's been with me this whole time. I've had lovely people to support me financially, emotionally, spiritually, and I know that will continue on. So even though it's scary to figure out where my life is going to be 5 years, 5 months from now, I'm very hopeful that no matter what it is, I'm going to be okay.
Very well said. Maybe you can take my spot up in Portland. There's still a vacancy up there. Well, our prayers and best wishes go
Thank
with you.
You,
you want
so
us to
much.
Call you an Uber or something so you can get to class?
No, I have my car.
Very good. Thanks so much for joining
Thank
us.
You for
it's been
me.
A complete pleasure.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more with John Watkins right after this. The Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the good folks at the Catholic Store, located at 1928 Broadway in downtown Sacramento. It has articles for baptism, First Communion, confirmation, ordinations, weddings, and much, much more, plus Bibles, books, holy cards, and a variety of gifts. Give them a call, 916-457-1970, or visit them at 1928 Broadway right here in Sacramento. We're also brought to you by a generous grant from the Knights of Columbus Todd Cabral Agency, which provides guaranteed wealth creation for your family and your passion while maintaining the highest ethical standards in the industry. The Knights of Columbus Insurance, keeping Father McGivney's promise alive by providing peace of mind to Catholic families since 1882. To find an agent in your area, call our good friend Todd Cabral. Todd is at 916-997-9999. Bishop's Hour is also pleased to have underwriting support from Catherine Fisher, LCSW, providing therapy and mental health services from a Catholic perspective. Catherine knows that our Catholic faith is interwoven into every aspect of our lives and relationships. She offers counseling for individuals, couples, and families. You can call her at 916-214-4623 or go to C. Fisher, LCSW, at CATHIMail.com.
Good morning. This is Sister Maria, and I'm the Formation Director for the Seminarians, and you are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Sister Maria. Thanks for all you do for vocations here in the Diocese of Sacramento. And before this day is over, we should recognize that the Reverend Billy Graham has just passed away, and a great man who spread the truth of Jesus Christ. We probably didn't agree with everything he said, but we certainly agreed with his heart and his
message.
Amen.
I mean, he was a man of integrity, a man of Christ, and a true disciple.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we can all look up to that.
At 99 years old.
Yeah.
He must have obeyed his mom and dad, because it says if you obey your mom and dad, you get a long and fruitful life. So
I like that. I'm going to use that tonight. Okay?
Indeed.
Thank you.
Indeed. We're with John Watkins, the Director of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns. We're talking about DACA. And Monday, John, we went, the USCCB wants people to call Washington, D.C., call your congressmen, call your senators. Specifically here in California, we're saying Kamala Harris, who voted against.
Right.
Against
and we, it. You know, I really think the true battle will be in the House. The real battle right now is the Congress is currently on a break. They're going to be coming back on Monday. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of voices in there saying, you know, let's just kind of give up. We're not going to do it.
Let it happen.
And I think we, as a people of faith, need to encourage all of them to get back and do your jobs and do this. And because it has an impact, this has been the pattern for decades now, where our Congress has just put its head in the sand, and it impacts people's lives. It's really important for us as a people of faith to put our voice into action and say, make this happen.
Now the bishops have come out with some talking points, some areas to emphasize.
Yeah, the four talking points are really, number one is to protect Dreamers from deportation, and to provide a path to citizenship. That's number one. And I think that if you look at all the legislation that has been proposed, that is one of the pieces. The other, though, is to really, for us to be very careful as we're moving forward, is to really reject proposals that undermine family-based immigration.
Yes. That's a sticking point for, because as you say, they've nicknamed it, if you will, a tag, chain migration, which is very negative sounding.
It is a negative sounding thing, and I think that there are some legitimate pieces of conversation we can talk about. And I think initially the president had talked about doing a phase one and a phase two. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing, I mean, if you poll not just the Americans, but the Congress itself, a huge majority of them would all say together that we should take care of these Dreamers.
Absolutely.
Right? But what's happening here, unfortunately, and this has been happening for many years now, is that they're using this concern, this issue that everyone agrees with, and essentially that 1.8 million people, as sort of a leverage point.
Right.
And so that if I don't get everything that I want, then I'm going to take the marbles, and it doesn't happen. Well, it doesn't happen has an impact on people like Maria Jose, who will not be able to get a job and not be able to live out, really, you know, she's a gift. She has so much to give the community, as you could see. And we're really hurting only not only them, but ourselves as a community, as a people. And so we need to get this taken care of. So we want to avoid this language of the chain migration. The other message that they say is, as Catholics, we know that families are not chains, but they're blessings. We got to get away from that. And wherever you fall on this issue, we got to be very careful not to denigrate either the human person or families. These are very sacred things. Yeah. At this point, maybe you might agree with one issue, whatever, but then that issue turns around and all of a sudden you don't agree and you don't have the family is no longer sacred or the person is no longer sacred. We're all in trouble. So we have to always uphold that. The last thing is really we need to do it now. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of inertia of doing nothing. And we have to remember March 5th is the deadline.
Yeah.
At March 5th, the world doesn't explode. I don't want to say it in that way. What I'd say is we'll be moving from, 122 people a day that are going to be not having their work permit. That number just begins to skyrocket to 500. And then in a couple months to 1,000 a day. Mm-hmm. These are people that their lives are turned upside down because of the people in Washington are too afraid to do what they know is right.
Well, it's been a truism of American politics that the closer you get to an election, the less chance there is of immigration reform, especially. George Bush came pretty close and was quite close with the Catholic position, mm-hmm. 12 or some years ago now, but got too close to an election and it fell apart. And we're thinking of November 2008, but there are a lot of primaries very soon, like California primaries in June, but there are other primaries even before that. And with the volatility of the whole political system right now, there are a lot of seemingly safe incumbents that are running scared. And
that's
they're not quite sure where to go on this one.
That's true. And I just think I want to honor the fact that it's not an easy job being a politician this year, these days. It's not easy. But politicians really, they owe it to the people. That's number one. But more importantly, there's a Bible verse that says, what is it if you gain the whole world but lose your soul?
Right.
You got to stay true to your morals. Do the right thing, period. And all things work for the good for those who follow Christ. So do what is right. And yes, will you be reelected? Maybe not. But it doesn't matter. Do the right thing. It's easy for me to say I'm not running for office, but we at least need to, as a people of faith, encourage them to do the right thing because they're getting a lot of other voices to do the wrong thing, do something else. And so at a minimum, it is up to us. We are complicit in this if we do nothing.
Yeah.
So we do need to at least add our voice. We truly say that we do hear in our disciples, we really need to put that into action. I'm not saying if you don't do it, you're not a good disciple. I'm not saying that. But we do have to make concrete. We're Catholic.
Right.
We're not it's not just we're Eucharistic, that we believe that God is incarnate and calls us to be his hands and his feet. And we're to make actions of love, not just statements of love, not just words. And so we need to do both. This is an opportunity for us to take action in a very simple way. So really, for folks, it's very easy. There's directions on the website on to what they can do if they go to the website, which is www.scd.org. But there's also they could just call if they want, and I could give a number if you would like. It's 855-589-5800. 5698. And that number is, of course, on the directions if you go onto the website. But I encourage the listeners to call. You don't have to say too much. Mm-hmm. Really, quite frankly, they're just going to mark a check right next to your name. And they're looking for how many people are calling on this to get a temperature check on this. And we need to raise the temperature in D.C. to get this to happen.
Do you know, are there other faith groups that are having similar campaigns on Monday?
I don't know that. I really don't know that. I know that traditionally speaking, where the Catholics step forward, others will follow. And so I would have no doubt that others are doing this. But this is truly a Catholic call to action.
Came right from the head of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, it is one of the critical issues of our time, and you know you hit it on the head. You know, Jesus says he never promised to be easy, but he does say you follow me, and it'll be easy. And I know we've all faced times in our lives where we had something that we facing that was going to be hard to do, and maybe we could take the easy way out. But once you decided this is the right path, and you just started doing it, it got a lot easier. Because you knew you were doing the right thing, not the
That's
Weasley
right.
thing or whatever.
Well, you know, look at Billy Graham, and he's an icon for that. For those that are not Catholic,
he's
a person
truth.
Of integrity.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was in many different tumultuous times through many different administrations who called him in for prayer, but he did not waver in his path to God. And so we got to honor that, and as something for all of us to look up to. And we as Catholics believe, of course, that our saints really are very important because they offer that path. They show us the way to God. And so, you know, it's telling that, you know, what you mentioned, Billy Graham, because, here's a man of integrity.
Yep.
And that's what we are all called to be as disciples.
Very good. John, thanks so much. Appreciate it. And we'll anxiously await Monday and hope that this is all solved in the way that would be pleasing to God.
Amen.
Amen.
Thanks, Bob.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love, and you can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation by calling 916-851-2700. Fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts is for all of us. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. Give them a call. They're at 916-338-7272 or drop on and visit them, 6916-6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Well, if you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to where you want to go. Details are available at Crumley & Associates. They're at 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks, or give them a call at 916-638-4600. We thank them for their longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. Underwriting is also provided to the Bishop's Hour by Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, a ministry of the Diocese of Sacramento. As a church-owned nonprofit founded in faith, Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services is dedicated to providing education, support, and resources during life's most difficult moments. They will make every effort to enable you to realize your final wishes while empowering families to make completely informed decisions. You can give them a call, 855-525-2285. We thank all the wonderful underwriters for the Bishop's Hour, and we hope you will support those who support us. Thanks for listening, everybody. God bless. We'll talk to you again soon.
This is Lincoln Snyder, Superintendent of Catholic Schools, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Well, here I am in a river of questions. can I pour my heart out to a listening ear? Well, I see this life, it's valleys and mountains, and I think of all the roads that brought me here. Oh, that brought me here. Walking down the road. Well, I've questioned my reasons, this life I'm living. I questioned my ability to judge wrong from right. Well, I questioned all the things I've ever called certain. My race, my religion, my country, my mind. But the one thing I don't question is you.